We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
On today's episode of the Pride Podcast, we have our post-game episode of the Lions versus the San Francisco 49ers. We're going to talk about the positives and the negatives from this game. And we're also going to talk about some injuries that occurred during this game. All on episode 192 of the Pride Podcast.
Blue Wire. With the seventh pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the Detroit Lions select Penei Sewell, tackle, Oregon.
He's going to run it straight in! Jared Goff!
Touchdown, Detroit Lions! T.J. Hockenson, yes. They did it! They tied it! They're an extra point away from winning this game! Oh, baby, how big is that?
Yo, what is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Pride Podcast, episode 192 on the Blue Wire Network. I am your host, Tyler, and I am here with my special co-host, as always, Malcolm Hart. How you doing, my man?
Woo! How you doing, man?
Doing well, man. First NFL Sunday in the books. First week of the NFL season in the books. Well, not technically at the time of this recording. Monday Night Football is happening, but by the time you guys are listening to this, it'll be officially the wrap of week one of the NFL season. No Pierre with us today, but we're going to do our first official post game of the regular season, and the Lions come up short versus San Francisco 49ers week one at Ford Field, losing this game in a fireworks affair of 41-33, high-scoring game in Detroit between the Lions and Niners. All right, so let's get right into it. There's a lot to cover here. You know, the Lions came up short. I don't think that's really the surprise here. Let's start off with the offense, though, because I thought there were some positives on the offense. I thought there's some negatives, but I want to start off with the positives. I'm going to kick it off to you, Malcolm. Let's start out with this offensive line, man. So obviously no Taylor Decker was a guy, you know, when we did our pregame show with the guys from the Niners pod, Striking Gold, you know, we said we don't have really many injuries, you know, to keep tabs up on the week. You know, we got our guys healthy and we don't have anything to worry about. We're going to the season 100% healthy. Well, I jinxed it because the day right after, Taylor Decker breaks his finger in practice and he's now out for a month at least. And he's placed on IR. You know, I was so confident. Like, oh, we're going to the season. No injuries. Our offensive line is healthy. We're getting Brockers back. We're healthy. We're good. You know, we got nothing to worry about. And you know, the guys from Striking Gold are like, we got Kinlaw. We got a couple corners out. Now we got, no, we're good. We're good. We're 100%.
Man, that's like, how did that happen? Man, like, out of all the injuries, like, I wouldn't have expect, like, the finger. His finger?
He broke it,
finger injury? That's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess offensive linemen, they need their fingers. Yeah, they have to have their fingers.
Yeah. And then, obviously, we couldn't talk about that because we were expecting our, you know, offensive line that we were scheduling all offseason. Decker at left tackle, Jonah Jackson at left guard, Ragnow at center, Big V at right guard, and then our rookie at the seventh overall pick, Penei Sewell, was going to play right tackle. But that whole plan got shifted because Taylor Decker is now, you know, getting surgery and he's out for at least a month. And the question was, who do you put at left tackle? Do you put Big V? Do you switch his position from guard to left tackle? Do you put Matt Nelson there? Do you put the rookie, Penei Sewell, who's initially a left tackle in college, do you put him there? The Lions end up going Penei Sewell at left tackle and putting Matt Nelson at right tackle and leaving everything else put. So I want to start off with the rookie, Penei Sewell. Obviously, it was a big task. They told him to go against Nick Bosa, his first NFL game, and 3 days before the NFL season, and they say, hey, yeah, I know you've been training all year at right tackle, but you're playing left tackle today. So what were your thoughts on Penei Sewell versus Bosa and just in general this first week of his NFL career?
I mean, he did a phenomenal job. And this is why I was so excited about this pick, because he showed why he is 7th overall pick. Gave no sacks. And just, you know, we don't go by PFF a lot. But just showing his grades, I mean, he looked phenomenal. I mean, overall 75, overall grade, run blocking grade is 78. He looked phenomenal. And the big question is, and I actually posted this on the pods page, is what the hell do we do with Taylor? If he's continuing to play the way he's playing right now, what the hell do we do when Taylor Decker comes back?
Yeah, no, that's going to be an interesting question now, because obviously, Penei Sewell, only 20 years old, you know, he was initially a left tackle, and it's something he looks comfortable in. I mean, we saw the reps at right tackle in the preseason, and we didn't think maybe it would be a big adjustment when we drafted him. We thought maybe it would be an easy transition for Penei Sewell to switch from left to right tackle. But, I mean, we got to be honest. He had struggles throughout camp. Like, he stood out sometimes, but for the most part, I would say it was more struggles than positives from Penei Sewell at right tackle. And, you know, now you factor Penei Sewell putting Thorne in a situation where he was throwing the woods. Like, if Penei Sewell struggled, we would have this whole script planned out. Like, you know, this guy's a rookie. He was not expected to play left tackle. We would have the whole thing plot out right now. But he goes out and balls out versus Nick Bosa in the San Francisco 49ers front seven. Like, he did a phenomenal job. Like, obviously, he wasn't 100% perfect the whole game. Like, you're going to give, like, a player up to Bosa. Like, that's just expected. But for the most part, he held up. He gave his quarterback time and gave his quarterback multiple reads, you know, throughout the game. And that was something good. And then, you know, not even just with Jared Goff, something else was really positive, and he was a big part of it. The run game. We've been talking about this run game all offseason. We've been talking about this run game since 2018 when we started this podcast. Are they ever going to get a run game going? And I'm not saying the run game is established by any means, but I think from our whole time of podcasting, that was probably one of the best showcases of a run game, or like a true run game going. And the stat sheet won't show it. Like, Swift, you know, didn't have the most rushing yards. Jamal Williams didn't have the most rushing yards. But it was the holes that were being created by those guys, by the offensive linemen, and our running backs finding those holes and making nice moves and, you know, getting good yardage. Like, you know, starting off the game, 10-yard runs, 12-yard runs, like every run felt good. And that's just something we have never had since me being a Lions fan. So you got to give credit to Penei Sewell playing left tackle. You got to give credit to the interior guys like Ragnow, Jonah Jackson, even Big V. Matt Nelson, I thought, was solid. Not the greatest in pass pro, but overall solid. I thought the offensive line held up really well versus a very good front seven in San Francisco, which I thought could be a problem because I knew both trenches were going to go at each other. But the Lions held up really well, and I thought they got their offense going a little bit. And, you know, they established a true running game, and I know that's something that Lynn and Campbell really want to get going. So that was just it was fun to watch.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, I really enjoyed it. And the reason why it didn't show up in the stats is because they did have to abandon it early because they got down big early. So they did have to abandon it. I mean, if you watch that scheme, the running scheme, it's probably the best I've seen in Detroit in a really long time. Usually with Detroit, and the reason why we struggle so much in finding his running game is because we always had man blocking scheme, and it's like now we're seeing like the zone blocking scheme, and this zone blocking scheme is actually working. He's creating these really big holes. You see the guards pulling, the tight ends pulling, and they're just creating these really big holes. And I think, you know, I feel like our running game has a lot of team problems in the future, and you know, going forward, you know, with Williams and Swift as they get, so that's something to definitely look forward to in the future, is our running game. I think our running game is something that I can honestly say that we may have a running game. And this running game may be in top half of the league.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, the running backs made some noise, and I'm not trying to overreact over, you know, 1 week, but it was a positive sign because this is a good San Francisco 49ers front, and our offensive line wasn't 100% full strength. You know, you're missing one of your biggest pieces on the left side with Taylor Decker, and you were thrown in a situation where you had to throw your rookie at left tackle, and Matt Nelson, God bless Matt Nelson. I mean, he's a fine player, but, like, you know, not a very ideal situation when he's starting. It's more of a guy that if it has to happen during a game, maybe you put him at the swing tackle, like at either tackle position, but it's not something you necessarily want to, you know, go into a game with, or, you know, game plan with, or, and that's something the Lions are going to have to kind of deal with, honestly, for the next couple weeks, as you know, far as Decker's recovering. So, but I thought you brought up a good question. You said you posted on the pod page. It's going to be interesting, you know, what they end up doing with Penei Sewell and just how these rest of these couple weeks go when Decker's on IR. How is Sewell going to do on that left side? And if he continues to impress, it's going to be an interesting decision. But I like to say it's a good decision because we have two options at left tackle. And, you know, how many teams could say they have a left tackle or, you know, they have options at left tackle? Not many. So to say we have two very reliable options who were comfortable with that left tackle, I think it's a very good sign. It's a really good sign. So I think it's a good situation to be in for the Lions. I know it's like it could be some controversy. It could be conflicting. But, like, I don't think you could go wrong either way. But if Penei Sewell's impressing, I think you got to stick with the hot hand and just let him develop there at that point. But we'll see. We'll see when we get there. We'll see how these weeks go. But overall, you know, test one for Penei Sewell, week one, check mark. He passed. Check. He passed this week, so he looked really good.
Detroit Lions football is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find Detroit Lions tickets anymore. Because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NFL tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that the other ticket sites charges, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all the NFL tickets. Don't believe it? If you find a better price for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. Visit TickPick.com/PridePodcast today and use promo code PridePodcast to save $10 on your first order of your Detroit Lions tickets.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. Let's continue to talk about this offense. We talked about the positives now with the offensive line. We talked about the run game going. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Jared Goff. This is obviously his first game as a Lion starting in the regular season. What did you think of Jared Goff? Obviously, the stat sheet looks really good, but fell down really big. You could mix that with the defense and with the offense. We'll get into the defense a little bit after. But Jared Goff's first game overall, What'd you think of it?
All right, so it's a lot of ups and downs. Okay, I personally feel like watching Jared Goff, I think that he played as well as he could. And the reason why I say that, I know people are like, "What the hell are you talking about? He dude's a check down king." You're looking at our offense, and even before, you know, the season started, you know, everybody said we don't have any weapons. They said that we have our wide receiver talent is probably in the bottom half of the league. Everybody said that's what everybody said. So now we go to week one, and then you're looking, everybody's saying, "Well, why is he not throwing the ball down the field?" I mean, guys, you're the one who said we don't have any wide receiver talent. You know, so I mean, it looks like that this is going to be the offense you're going to see, guys. And the reason why I say that is because we're going to be mainly a running team. And I think Jared Goff is going to take what the offense, what the defense gives him. Meaning if, you know, they're covering the wide receivers, I think he's going to check it down. So you're going to see checkdowns. It's going to happen. You're going to see, you know, he's going to take his shots. I can see him taking a few shots down the field. But if you're looking for this vertical offense, like the St. Louis Rams or the Chiefs. This is not the offense. This is not the offense you're gonna see, guys. We don't have a true number one receiver to even establish an offense like that. So I mean, you're looking at our best option offensively is T.J. Hockenson and Swift, and then you're looking at Jamal Williams. So he's gonna get those. He's gonna find these guys. That's why you're going to see a lot of checkdowns. But looking at Jared Goff's performance, I mean, the first half, it was pretty rough. He only threw 93 yards in the first half. But in the second half, he came alive. He threw 246 yards in the second half. And he ended up with a solid game. I mean, I don't look at it as like a good game or a great game. I don't look at it like a bad game. I think that he just played like Jared Goff.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just the standard of Lions fans, not that the expectation of the season. I know this is different, but like it's the standard of watching number nine.
That's what it is.
And I hate to
let that go.
And I hate to bring up Stafford. I hate to do it because it's the past and he's not a Lion anymore. But it's true. I think people just are used to watching Matthew Stafford. And I said it multiple times. And when I was next to Pierre during that game, I'm like, man, I miss Stafford, dude. I mean, like I miss him slinging that ball around a little bit. Just, you know, from the excitement standpoint. But overall, I mean, what did people expect from Jared Goff?
And especially with our wide receiving core. What did people honestly expect him to do this game?
I mean, I didn't think he was very good because I saw some very low passes, some very high passes. Wasn't as accurate as we've seen him in the past.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It wasn't anything that was outstanding. I have the same thoughts about Jared Goff. Like, nothing has changed for me. Like, I never thought he was the franchise quarterback of this whole long-term thing. I think he's the bridge guy for now. I mean, and obviously things could change. There's still 16 more games to go. I'm not trying to overreact over week one. But, I mean, my thoughts have not changed about Jared Goff. I don't think he now suddenly sucks. I don't think he now suddenly is great. I think he is what I thought he was, what he showed me from that week one performance. And that's not a shot to him. It's just, I don't think he's, you know, he's the greatest talent. I think he is what he is. He did what he I mean, you said it. Like, he did what, like, was given by the 49ers defense. Like, this is a good defense. It's a very good defense. And, you know, I thought there was some times, there was some opportunities where he could have taken some shots down the field. I thought his receivers were open at times. I saw Terrell Williams a couple times down. Just, you know, he made multiple reads. Just didn't want to take a chance. I don't know why. I thought there were some opportunities where he could have taken some chances. And that's where I would give him the shot and say, you know, you got to take some shots at some point. Because checking down, dinking, doinking, it could work. It could work versus certain defenses. I'm not saying it's, you know, something that doesn't work in the NFL. But at the same time, when you're playing a team like San Francisco, you got to take shots down the field at some point. I'm not saying all game because it's obviously not Stafford. You're not taking the same shots as you are going to with a quarterback like Matthew Stafford with elite arm talent. But I would have liked to see him take more shots and kind of see some more urgency from this offense as well, because it felt like when they were down big, when they were down like three touchdowns, it just didn't really feel like there was much urgency. And that also goes into play with that they couldn't run the ball anymore because they were down so big. And that obviously takes so much of the offense away when you can't get the run game going. Because, I mean, Goff isn't one of those quarterbacks where he could just rely on passing 50 times a game. He's not going to win that way. I mean, there's only a certain handful of quarterbacks who could win that way when they're passing 50 times a game. You got Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, Stafford. There's a couple of them, but I just don't think Jared Goff is in that category where you could rely on him to pass the ball that many times. And when you're down so big, I mean, and you're forced to a situation where you can only pass, it's going to put the Lions in really tough situations. And, you know, they still found a way to somehow come back into this game and make it competitive and give them a shot to tie this game. You know, they had the ball over the last drive and they had opportunity to tie the game and go to overtime. I mean, they gave them the opportunity and, you know, they came up short. But the fight that this team showed, it was great. It was great towards the end of the game. Obviously, you want to see some more urgency throughout the game, but, you know, they fought through and they played a different style of football that they are not going to play this year. I mean, they had to pass the ball at the end of the game and they were doing it successfully towards the end of the game. Obviously, the Niners were playing a lot more conservative on defense, playing a little more high, giving the Lions more passing, you know, room so they could, you know, complete these passes, just not trying to get beat deep. So that's why, you know, opened more of the offense up in the passing game. But I mean, overall, I thought Jared Goff just did what, you know, I expected. And, you know, it just is what it is. It's nothing great. It's nothing bad.
I mean, I think a lot of people got to also take into consideration, and I don't want to use this as an excuse or anything. You know, this is Jared Goff in a brand new offense. He's playing with brand new receivers that he never played before. So I think as the weeks goes on, I think he's going to develop a chemistry with at least one of these guys where he can trust and to say, all right, you're going to be my number one target. And I think that's when we're going to see a better Jared Goff. I think we could see a better Jared Goff. I think week one wasn't the best of Jared Goff. You know, he missed some throws. He missed some throws that could have been touchdowns. Like, there was St. Brown pass. And that's just bowls on the chemistry.
Yep.
So that stuff like that, I think he could clean that up and have a better performance, you know. But I honestly think that, you know, he played the best he could. I think there was a certain area of the team that didn't give him much help. But we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah. I mean, but overall... I thought I had the Monday night game, just the volume come on. But overall, I thought, you know, the offensive line did a really good job. It was a good front four, and they gave Goff time, and they gave him time to make reads. And it came down to sometimes the receivers not creating separation, and it also came down to sometimes Goff not wanting to take the shots and going a little more safe and dumping it down to Hockenson or dumping it down to Jamal Williams or dumping it down to Swift, you know? It goes hand in hand. But overall, big kudos to the offensive line. I think it's my biggest takeaway from this whole entire game as a positive going forward, because I think that was the biggest strength that we highlighted all offseason for this team and going for this team going forward, not just this year, going forward, because they have so many young pieces and guys locked up. And we saw a very good example versus a very good front four. So I think that's very encouraging. I think Lions fans should be really excited about that offensive line. And we've said it all year. Wins and losses this year are just not as important as years previous. It's all about development this year, man. And you saw that.
I still want us to win some games.
No, you want to win. You want to win every game. You want to win every game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
but I get what you're saying. Are you as down right now about this loss compared to if this was last year?
No, because last year...
We had expectations.
Last year, it wouldn't have been like this. I don't see the Lions... putting up a fight like this.
Well, it would be interesting if they fell down that big. I mean, if you have Stafford, I don't think you fall down that big.
Yeah, that was a pretty big hole that they're in. And for them to fight back like that, that was good to see, man. It was good to see. It gave me, though, the biting kneecap vibes, you know?
Yeah. It kind of gave you vibes of not the previous regime, but the regime before that, where they were like the comeback Lions, you remember, in 2016?
Yes. Yes.
Remember that 8 of their 9 wins were comeback victories, where in the Patricia era, it was it was they got off to hot starts. They got off to good, really good starts. You know, got off to games, but just crumbled when it came to the fourth quarter.
That's, you know what, with this regime, that's what I want to see.
You want to see if they could just sustain a lead,
exactly. I want to see how they react when they get the lead. Are they going to crumble in the fourth quarter like the pass lines, or I just want to see. I want to see how they react. So, are we even going to get to see that?
I was just asking that question. I said, I don't know how many opportunities we're going to have to like lead against the fourth quarter.
I mean, the positive is that our division's not looking too great.
I think the bigger positive with the whole division outlook that, you know, there isn't a rebuilding team outside of the Lions in this division, and
they all look terrible. Yeah, I think the best looking team.
Stinks.
Yeah, the best looking team I think was what the Vikings maybe, the Bears, the Packers are downright pitiful.
The Bears' offense looked a little better than I expected versus the Rams' defense, but Stafford, I mean, Stafford was cooking out there, man.
He cooked them. Yeah, there was nothing they could do.
Yeah.
The Vikings.
No, they went to OT with Cincy.
Yeah, but how good is Cincy? No, I don't know.
Very good this year.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know.
I think overall, I mean, I'm not trying to overreact over just week one. I still think it's the Packers division right now.
I still think it's the Packers? You're in a relaxed age? You're in a relax?
I think they'll turn it around, man. I think they're going to turn it around eventually.
Screw the Packers.
I mean, fuck the Packers for all that. But, I mean, if I have any, I guess, expectation, I think it's going to be the Packers division still. I mean, someone's got to win with this North, right? I mean, it's only week one. I mean, you know, we're going to see some crazy shit week one, but that was bad, dude. The New Orleans Saints beat him in every single phase of the game.
Yeah, it was bad.
Your boy Jameis, man, 5 passing touchdowns,
that's
dude.
That's not my boy. That's not my boy, but he did look good, I have to admit.
The laser eye surgery, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'm like, shoot, if he has a good season, I'm going to start doing his training exercises. All of them. All of them.
His post game interview or something like that. He goes, the trainer said we gotta go, and we went.
Oh shit! Let's get back into it. Oh man!
All right, let's talk about the Lions. All right, so we talked about the offense. Offensive line impressed us both. Jared Goff. I mean, I think you liked his outing a little better than I did. I did,
and again, this is a brand new offense, brand new receivers. He doesn't have a number one receiver. We gotta realize he's playing with what he has out there, and he doesn't have the talent on the receiving core right now. I mean, I think as the weeks go on, he's gonna have a better chemistry, but that's what we have, man. You just gotta take it as it is.
I think looking forward too as well, I think it's so much more important to have these trenches down, locked down early in the rebuild compared to those skill positions. So like, I'm excited that we got our trenches, you know, more established right now than our receivers, because we've seen in the NFL, man, you could bring a receiver from free agency. You could bring a receiver from the draft. And you could trade for a guy. And you could find number ones in even free agency. I mean, just look at the Lions. Marvin Jones comes in, locks in right away week one. Golden Tate comes in. Wasn't number one because of Calvin Johnson. But, you know, a guy that had 100 reception with Matthew Stafford. So that's a position that's not as difficult to fill in compared to a left tackle, compared to a center. And the Lions, so early in this rebuild, the first game of this rebuild, we're already talking about the trenches, at least on the offensive side, being a big plus going forward. So I like that so much more than, you know, not having a stud receiver, because we're going to get that. We're going to get that down the line. Yeah. I'm not worried about that right now.
Absolutely.
So I'm excited, man. I saw what I need to see off that offensive line, and I want to see more of it, obviously, throughout the season. But, you know, when tears came down in my eyes when we drafted Penei Sewell, yeah, I almost threw another cheer yesterday when I was watching him at left tackle versus Bosa.
Versus Bosa, he looked phenomenal, man.
And we'll see. He's got another big test this week. You know, he's got the Smiths this week. So, I mean, they've always given us trouble. They've always given us trouble since they've came to Green Bay. So, we'll see what Sewell could do, this Monday on national TV in Lambeau. So, I'm excited, man. This guy's showing me that he's just going to be a stud. He's showing me he's going to be a stud.
He is.
All right. Let's not talk about all the positive now, because we got to talk about the defensive side of the ball, man.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
So, obviously, Aaron Glenn, his first game being a play caller in the regular season. What's your takeaways from this defense so far?
Oh, man.
We'll talk about Jeff afterwards. Let's just talk about the whole defense first.
The whole defense in general, they struggled in the beginning. I don't think it was coaching. I think AG coached them up, but you could tell that these guys weren't playing their gaps, and they were giving up a lot of big runs. We gave up the big run to was it Mitchell? What was the running back
name? Elijah Mitchell, day three pick.
We gave up some big runs. And it's all just gap assignments, man. Just somebody not in their gap and he just breaks out. And that was just tough. And between that, you know, and our secondary, which even before the season started, I had our secondary as the biggest weakness on this team. The secondary just, they didn't look good.
Yeah, no. I mean, I thought something that we could have more of a advantage in this game at least was a pass rush. And I felt like there were moments where we displayed some pass rush. But overall, I mean, it was still a lot of time for Jimmy G in that pocket. And this offensive line for San Francisco, I'm not going to say it's a bad offensive line. I'm not going to say it's a great offensive line. It's a very, you know, average offensive line. And I thought, you know, this would be one of the line's strengths maybe going into the year. I thought Romeo could have a big game potentially, or Trey maybe gets to the quarterback a little bit. But, you know, it was very limited. You didn't see really moments of the lines really getting to the quarterback. I thought Jimmy had a lot of time to go through his reads. And, you know, overall, I mean, this offense is very quick. Like, they do a lot of quick passes, and the receivers get open really quickly. So it didn't really give time for the pass rush to really get home to the quarterback, just because of how Kyle Shanahan's offense works. He likes to, you know, display quick plays. He has these motions going everywhere. So, I mean, he schemes this guy perfectly. I mean, we've talked about Kyle Shanahan, man. He is a genius, dude. He's a genius. And there was multiple times throughout the game, I'm like, damn, that's Kyle Shanahan scheming, guys, man. He knows where to put his guys, and where's guys, you know, and his guys are just so disciplined to follow them, you know, follow his plays. And, you know, I think it was a mix of the Lions defense, and I think it was a mix of Kyle Shanahan. It's like, you got to give credit to Shanahan, but at the same time, the Lions defense, you know, just wasn't really good overall. And you mentioned the secondary, man. Starting off with the corners, Jeff Okuda, who will miss the rest of the season. And we're going to talk about the significance of that in a little bit. But, you know, starting with Jeff Okuda, who is supposed to take a next step this year and, you know, be that guy going forward. We want to, you know, be confident that he could be that cornerback one for this team, drafting him third overall in 2020, sorry. You know, we had high hopes for a guy like this. And we knew it was a tough matchup, you know, with Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, who didn't get a catch this game, which, okay.
Mind-boggling. I don't know how he did not get a catch.
He didn't get a catch.
Was he targeted this game?
I didn't see it. I mean, maybe.
I didn't see him get targeted either.
Maybe, but that was odd. But, like, Deebo Samuel just was having a day versus any corner he was going against. If it was Amani, if it was Okuda, and then Will Harris, man, same mistakes, dude. Just taking bad pursuit angles and not getting good angles on tackles. Bad tackling for him again this week. I mean, I'm just curious. You know, you mentioned the secondary was your biggest concern going into the season. I'm assuming this wasn't a very, you know, they didn't change your mind after this game.
No, definitely not, man. It was bad. And, you know, I thought some of our guys would play better. You know, I'm actually really big on Amani. I think Amani did a lot to his game. That we haven't seen yet. But, you know, when he's playing against those guys, those really good route runners, the guys who can run routes really good, you could tell he struggles. When he gave up that touchdown in the first quarter, do you remember the wide receiver name for San Francisco?
Sherfield.
Sherfield, that's
right. Trent Sherfield.
Yeah, man. He gave up that touchdown. Yeah, man. He gave it up. He gave up that touchdown by Trey Lance. But it was just a hell of a route, and he just had him lost in that play. But, I mean, other than that touchdown he gave up, he did have a couple PBUs. So that's a positive, but it just seems like it was just automatic for the 49ers. You know what I mean? Like, they actually didn't punt the ball. You realize they didn't punt the ball until the third quarter. That's when they had their first punt of the game. Yeah. And that's, as a defense, that's unacceptable. You can't, if you're playing against a team and they're getting their first punt in the third quarter, you're not doing something right on defense.
They were scoring every single drive. I think the only drive they didn't score until
was the first one.
Was that missed field goal, right, by Robbie Gould?
It was a missed field goal, and then also the fumble at the first snap of the game.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, the fumble on the first play.
First snap.
Yeah, okay. Take out that drive because the Lions didn't do anything that play besides pick up the football. You know, that was just a bad Jimmy G dropping the ball. So
exactly.
You know, take out that. The Lions gave some type of point on defense every single drive.
To the third quarter.
From the first quarter to the third quarter.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That's not good at all. I mean, when you're in a situation like that, I mean, it puts the offense in a really bad spot. And that's the reason why we couldn't get our running game going. We got so behind early that we had to abandon it. So it's just stuff like that they have to clean up. And then a lot of things that I noticed is like the middle of the field was like, it was like automatic. Like whenever there was a guy just sitting in the middle of the field, or a guy doing a post, or a guy just doing a, you know, 10 and in, he was wide open.
Yeah.
And it's like, I want to go back to see exactly where they're playing cover two, cover three, or what were they playing to make them be so wide open? But that middle field is open. They got to clean that up. If not, this is going to be a rough day for every team we play.
Yeah. I think on defense too, something I just didn't really like was that I thought it was very predictable. I thought we didn't really have much adjustments throughout the game, even though we were getting beat. And, you know, I thought they were just very sticking to what they were doing the whole game. And that was a big problem I had with Patricia, was not adjusting throughout the game and just kind of sticking with their guts. And same thing with Glenn this game. I'm not going to say this is going to be that's how the trend's going to go all season, because that's just not fair. It's his first game ever calling. So I'm not going to say that it's going to be the trend going forward. But something you want to see more from this defensive staff is adjustments, because they were in that same look all game. You know, you had the five-man front, and you had two corners on the outside. You had the two linebackers and the two safeties at back. And if they weren't in that five-man front, you went the four-man front, and you went with A.J. Parker in the nickel. But I felt like there was no blitzes. It was just zone defense all game. And, you know, when Kyle Shanahan sees a weakness, he's going to attack it, attack, attack. And not just Kyle Shanahan. A lot of NFL offenses will do that. They're going to attack your weaknesses until you figure out that you could stop it. And the Lions couldn't stop it all game. And that's why Kyle Shanahan kept going to it, because it was his bread and butter. And I'm going to give credit to Jimmy Garoppolo, too, because he was very accurate this game, and he was making the right throws at the right time. So I give credit to him as well. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, I just want to see more adjustments from the staff, because, you know, as far as the offense, you know, they obviously had to adjust because the situation the defense put them in. It wasn't maybe a situation they want to adjust to, but they adjusted. And, you know, you could say they adjusted well because they had a nice comeback towards the end of the game. The defense, I want to see more adjustment. You know, the last drive, the last San Francisco 49ers drive, the Lions got a fumble, but again, I don't know how much that was of the Lions defense or if that was just Debo Samuel, you know, messing up on a play. So
you're talking about the last fumble caused by Trey Flowers.
Yes.
That was Trey Flowers all day. He punched the ball out.
He did.
He punched the ball out. So that was a hell of a play, man. The right timing for Trey Flowers to get us the ball back to give us a chance at that game.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. I saw on social media a lot of the players or ex-players took offense to the Aubrey Pleasant. I guess how he was coaching your boy Jeff Okuda. I almost said Jeffrey. they took offense to it, and they actually went on their stories and they talked about it. They were saying how you shouldn't talk to a grown man like this.
Yeah.
This is not the right way. This is bullshit. Blah, 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 blah. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the way Aubrey Pleasant was coaching Jeff Okuda? Do you feel like he was out of line, or do you feel like Jeff Okuda needs that tough love? Maybe he needs to get punched in the face.
I mean, obviously, we don't know the words that were actually being exchanged during this conversation. So I think that's what really comes down to it. It's like, what were the words being exchanged? And it looked like Jeff Okuda was saying some stuff back. It looked like it wasn't just Okuda sitting down and taking it. Like, Okuda was not just taking it and sitting, like, listening. Like, it looked like he was talking back. He was chirping back to Aubrey Pleasant as well. But, I mean, we saw towards the end there was some tough love because, you know, you saw the wholesome moment, I like to say, when AP hugs Okuda.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's really difficult because, like, I don't know the words that were being exchanged. But, I mean, I don't think Aubrey Plessy was out of line because Okuda was having a tough game, man. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily the way to coach because, I've never been a coach. I feel like GQ and James Edebo would know better than me, obviously, you know, in that situation. And they thought it was out of line, but I don't know. I think it's a tough situation to really, you know, judge because I don't know the words that were being exchanged. I feel like if AP was disrespectful, then okay, that's different. Like, you know, that's not okay. But if it was just tough love and like saying like, motherfucker, you got to step up, you got to turn your head around, like that's different. That's, I'm fine with that. You could have tough coaching and still get the best out of your guys. So, you know, I don't really have much of an opinion on it. It's just, it is what it is. Obviously it was going to blow up because it made the Fox broadcast. So I don't know. What's your thoughts on it? I don't really have much of an opinion on it.
I mean, I think he did the right thing, man. When you're a coach, I think you got to know your players. You got to know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
AP couldn't do that to a 12-year vet.
True.
If you did that to a 12-year vet, they'll be pissed off. Like, they'll be mad. A younger guy, maybe a rookie, second-year player, guy who's developing and know that this coach is actually helping him. Because, you know, Jeff Okuda actually came out multiple times and said AP was the best thing for him. I think that kind of motivates him to get better. So I think that tough love is needed. And I think he did the right thing. So I don't have no problem with it. I have no problem with it. When it goes to young players and stuff like that, as long as you're not being disrespectful, like Pencilhead did, I think it's fine. But yeah, I don't think he crossed the line. I think it's that borderline, you know, parent relationship, coaching relationship, you know. So I'm fine with it. Yeah. But going to your, you know, staying on topic with Jeff Okuda. This is tough. This injury that he has,
it's terrible.
This is terrible news. This is terrible for him. And this is terrible. This is not good. A ruptured Achilles is not a ideal injury for a cornerback that you need to cut and you use your feet a lot. It's mainly everything's your feet. This is tough.
Yeah. No, this is a tough blow, man. I mean, this is not 2 years in a row where Okuda's had significant injuries. And now he's going to miss the rest of the season with this torn Achilles. I mean, I hate to put labels and I hate to say all this, but I think right now it's fair to call him a bust.
No, don't say it.
It's fair.
No, don't say it.
I mean,
you don't have to say it.
Yeah. I'm the guy, like, I don't know. It's just really tough, man. Like, I know he's a young corner. He's got still a lot of years left, but just looking at years previous of the NFL, when guys get an injury like this, I'm not saying this is a career for Jeff Okuda, but, you know, as far as the guy we expected him to be, or maybe not you, but the Lions fan base expected him to be.
Yeah. We all expected him to be.
With the third overall pick. With the third overall pick. You know, it's just really tough, man. The elite seems like it's out of the question now to be your lockdown cornerback one. It seems like that's out of the question. The question I'm asking is, like, what's his role in the NFL now? Is he a corner still? Is he going to transition to a different position, like a safety now? Like, what is it now? Like, what are you going to do with Jeff Okuda? I mean, he's still young. He'll be 23 when by next season. Like, it's going to be an interesting question. I'm pretty much counting out, you know, anything where he's not, I don't think he's a cornerback one anymore. Like, I thought that could be something that we could have figured out, you know, throughout this rebuild, that Jeff Okuda could be that guy, that cornerback one. I'm kind of counting that out now. I just don't think he could ever be that guy anymore. Wow. Maybe he turns into a solid cornerback two. I think that would be the upside right now, as if he could be a cornerback two. And it just sucks because the guy's obviously really talented. Has a lot of skill traits where he could have been that guy. But with this injury, and from what we've seen, it's going to be tough, man. And I hate to say it, but it's going to be really tough for Jeff Okuda in this recovery.
And before the listeners are like, you guys are bashing him, I just want everybody to know, we're not bashing him. Okay. It just, when a player is developing and trying to become the player that you want them to be, and they take this type of injury, it's going to be a hurdle. It's going to be a hurdle for him to even get back to where he was. And where he was wasn't that good.
Yeah.
You know, he was trying to develop into a star player, where he was, you know, that guy, you know, that corner. So it's going to be tough. He's not going to just come back next year and all of a sudden be a star corner, guys. I'm just going to let everybody know. He's going to probably come back next year. He may not even be the same guy as he was this year.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, how bad is that? You know, that's not very good. So I'm hoping the best for Jeff Okuda. I hope he does recover. And who knows, man? Hopefully he could shock everybody, and, you know, comes out better. Maybe get a robotic leg, ankle, or something. I don't know.
I think you got to think in Brad Holmes' case right now. Like, too, I think Brad Holmes, like, you're building the team right now, and obviously, like, right now, it's not as important because you're not going to get any corner right now to, like, really step in for Okuda. Like, I'm saying outside of what you got of your organization, like, but I'm saying as far as the team building aspect. You know, Brad Holmes can't go into the offseason and now saying, I got my cornerback one position locked. Unless one of these other guys steps up to the plate. Like, you know, these low-key guys, like Amani Oates maybe steps into a cornerback one, or if Fatu Melifonwu steps up. Like, that's the only way. But I'm saying if, you know, it is what we expect, let's say, going forward, like, from our secondary, and, like, it's just not a true number one corner, Brad Holmes can't go into the offseason and saying, hey, I got a number one corner with the room we have right now. I mean, obviously, that's, like I said, it's bearing of what happens with these other corners throughout the season. But as of right now, I think Brad Holmes is confidently saying, I don't have a cornerback one on my team right now. And that's something I need to address in the offseason.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see how somebody could step up.
That's what I'm saying. Though he's going to let – obviously, the season's going to play out. And a guy could step up. Someone could be a stud. Maybe a Fatu Melifonwu comes out of nowhere and he's a lockdown corner and he can be our one. But what I'm saying is, like, right now, I think Brad Holmes is thinking, well, what I'm thinking or what you're thinking, we don't have a cornerback one on this team right now. Like, a legitimate cornerback one. And that's something that we need to address.
Let me ask you a question before we go to the oopsie doops and baller of the week. Do you feel like this is a big hurt for the secondary?
Yeah, for sure. Because Okuda was not only expected to be the cornerback one throughout the season, this was a guy that was also a leader. And we've mentioned how young the secondary is, and they needed kind of someone to step up to the plate. And it seemed like Okuda was being that guy where he was stepping up to the plate and he was embracing the leadership role of, you know, being vocal, you know, having guys to his side, the young guys like Jerry Jacobs, a guy he put under his wing and helped him make this 53-man roster. So as far as a leadership standpoint, this is a blow. As far as a guy that we expected to be a cornerback one and we were excited to see what he could do throughout the season, this is a blow. It's a blow in every aspect of what you wanted to see. And I just don't know what to expect anymore of him. You know, anything is good at this point now, because whatever he could do with the, you know, the transition to, you know, coming back from this injury and maybe sticking a corner, or, you know, maybe he's a safety. I don't know what's going to happen with Jeff Okuda, but, you know, it definitely sucks. But, you know, it opens the door for the next man up. And I know it's a cliche, next man up, but it's true. It's opening up doors for another guy, and maybe doors that he didn't expect to be this early, or at least damn near I didn't expect. If Fatu Melifonwu was going to get to start now, it seems like. And I know Dan Campbell said don't sleep on our other guys like Bobby Price.
If I see Bobby Price out there, I'm not going to be happy.
He said it's probably iffy, but don't sleep on the other guys. Which,
no, I am taking a hard nap with the other guys.
He's saying it's Fatu Melifonwu, basically.
Yeah, I really hope is if, you know, Melifonwu. I really hope it is, because I'm telling you, Bobby Price is our starter. I'm not going to be too happy.
You're the next man up if someone gets down, though.
If somebody else gets down?
Yeah.
Then I'll be like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know, all right, we got to go with Bobby Price. But if Bobby Price is the next man up after one injury, oh, shit, that's not good. That's really not good.
I feel
this dude wasn't even a corner last year.
he was a safety. He wasn't even a corner going to camp.
He wasn't even a corner going to camp, and this is the best we have? This won't be good. This would not be good.
Yeah, so, I mean, it definitely sucks, man. It's a blow. And, like I said, next man up. We'll see what Melifonwu could do. He's got a big test this week versus Green Bay. Hopefully, maybe Amani could step up into a bigger role. We've seen flashes from Amani, but maybe some bigger flashes because maybe he could take on that next step of his career and maybe progress it and say, hey, we got a guy here. But I don't know. I just don't view anyone on this team right now who could be this cornerback one. I hope I'm wrong. Hopefully, it's figured out. But I feel like this is going to be a position that we're going to address in the offseason.
Yeah. I'm actually excited to see if Malafonu.
I am can't. Too.
Yeah, man. He's a 6'3 corner. 6'3 corner? That's huge.
Yeah. I mean, I think Malafonu's got a role in this team somewhat. And, like, if he could develop and they could develop him right, I think he's got a very high, you know, future and high upside, that's for sure.
We'll see how that goes, man.
So, yeah. I think overall, that's it. Yeah, let's just go into the oopsie doopsie and ball of the week, and we could wrap it up. So, I'm going to give you the honors because Pierre's not here. You get to make the ball of the week.
Yes, sir. Oh, wait, is this me? I'm up right now?
You're up right now.
Okay. So for the baller of the week, this is a no-brainer. I'm pretty sure Pierre co-signs this, and we're going to roll with Penei Sewell. Baller of the week, handled his own. You know, first start, had a big task, Nick Bosa. Made Nick Bosa look like the average Joe. Nick Bosa couldn't do
like, Nick Bosa had his moments throughout the game.
He had his moments, but like some plays is like, oh shit, Nick Bosa is going nowhere. Like he was just locked, just one on one. You know, that was really good, man. So yeah, he's definitely Penei Sewell is going to be our baller of the week.
That makes me so happy. Week one, we're talking about Penei Sewell, baller of the week.
Yeah,
he's
man.
He's right now the favorite to be MVP of baller of the week.
The yes,
he's right now the favorite.
So far, man. Just get it rolling.
Okay. Now let's get into the oopsie doopsie of the week.
Oh, boo-hoo. Let me play a sad song for you on the world's smallest violin.
Okay. I hate to do this. I think I'm giving it to Jeff. Is that right? He just went down. He just tore his Achilles.
That's terrible. Yeah, he did just tear his Achilles. You got to kick him while he's down. That's terrible. Yeah, you might as well kick him while he's down. I mean, shoot.
I mean, is it a bad pick, though?
Is it a bad pick?
Could you justify somebody else?
Who had a rougher outing than Jeffrey? No, there is nobody.
Like, no one stood out significantly more than Jeff Okudah as far as bad.
No, even Matt Nelson could be a no. Matt Nelson
no,
played.
No, like he didn't stand out like that. Yeah,
he had his moments.
Like Jared Goff too. He wasn't the reason they lost this game.
No, it wasn't Jared Goff.
He
put up 33 points.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I know people have to shit on Will Harris, but like, okay, he had he didn't make a pursuit tackle, but that play starts with Jeff Okudah.
Oh yeah, that definitely starts with Jeff. Yeah.
So. I mean, it's got to be Jeff Okudah. I'm sorry.
Damn.
And
ankle injury and all, man.
At least Damn. He won't. I mean, at least right now he won't win the award this year because he won't play anymore this year. So he can't win. He can't get any more.
Damn. I guess yeah. I lost. I had him projected as a oopsie too. No.
No. So yeah, I mean, it's Jeff Okudah. I mean, it was just a tough game for him overall. And obviously the injury cut that game short for him, and it's cut his season short. It's tough. No one significantly stood out to me as far as badness. I know our whole defense played pretty bad as a whole, but you know I think it starts off with Okudah's struggles of you know giving up big plays. It just kind of took out the whole momentum of the game. Like if Okudah makes that play on Debo instead of giving him a touchdown, the whole momentum of the game changes right there.
Absolutely. Imagine if he gets an interception.
Imagine if he just gets a pass breakup and forces a punt. Because at that point, we weren't forcing any punts or, you know, like, I mean, just imagine that. Like, from a about to be fourth down, what was that? Was that third down that Debo play?
That was a third down play.
Yeah, so from about to get the ball back, a third and long, third compared and long. To, what was it, a 60-yard touchdown or something like that?
It was an awful pass. The blitz, the pressure got there.
Yeah, and Okuda was there. It wasn't like he got beat. He was there. All he had to do was turn the head and literally throw your arm. PBU right there.
Yeah, man. Shoot.
So that just took all momentum. That's when Pierre was like, man, you want to leave the game? And I forgot to mention during this podcast, Pierre wants to leave the damn game. I almost missed that damn comeback because of Pierre. I almost missed that damn comeback. I had to make fucking bets with Pierre on the side. I said, Pierre, if we get the outside kick, we have to stay. Thank the Lord Jesus, we got the outside kick. When we get the outside kick, I was leaving. I was out the doors, guys.
Oh, man.
But what's my call, though? So if anyone calls me an SOL, or you guys shift this up to Pierre, I didn't want to leave. I did not want to leave.
Wait. So it was after that play, Pierre was like, let's get out of here?
Hold on. We weren't even in our seats. We weren't even in our seats. When Jamal Williams punched that touchdown, he's like, okay, I saw what I had to see. He's like, let's go. I'm like, all right. I'm like, all right, fine, let's go. All right, we go up the stairs. I'm like, all right, Pierre, we got to turn around. They're going for an onside. If we get recover the onside kick, we got to stay. We're going back down. Austin Seibert kicks an onside kick. Kittle drops the ball. We recover. I'm like, we got to stay now. And I see Jared Goff is just slinging that ball. I'm like, oh, my God, we're getting big completions. We're scoring the ball. I'm like, all right, Pierre, we're going to get another onside kick. We're down one. And then, but like, even that, like, we scored and it made it a one-possession game. We had three timeouts. I'm like, okay, we forced a three and out, which we couldn't do all game. But if we forced three and out, we got a chance. And that, I mean, Ford Field lit up after that. I mean, the stadium was half empty. It was all Niners fans at that point. But the fans that were in there, they were lighting up, man. It was exciting.
I was out of my seat. I was hyped. I mean, that was good stuff, man. It was showing that fight, man. Do you think that we're going to have that momentum and take it into the next game? Do you think we can actually do that? Because I know in the past game, that never happened.
I'm not a big guy in moral victories. Like, I know some people would consider this a moral victory. I'm just not mad right now, but I don't really consider it a moral victory. But, you know, I think the players have that confidence right now. They're like, hey, we were down bad. We were down really bad, but we improved as the game gone on, and we almost came back versus a pretty damn good football team. So I think they have some momentum going into Green Bay right now, even though they lost that game, just the ending of it. So we'll see. I hope we could see some fire, you know, week one or week two when we go to Lambeau on Monday night versus Green Bay. Like, you know, let's get a quick touchdown or, like, let's throw the ball a little bit. Like, you know, I want to see some momentum, or maybe the defense. Maybe the defense starts off. Let's get a three and out to start the game, or, like, a quick stop, you know, or a turnover. Like, I think that would be really good for this team.
Yes, sir.
All right. With that being said, that is a wrap. And I guess a quick recap from Ford Field. Niners fans showed up, man. I give them credit, dude. There was a lot of red there. The Red Sea showed up there in this game.
I told you, you're going to be surrounded by Niners fans because you guys, first of all, you guys got the seats by the Niners side. On the Niners side. Yeah. The visitor side. I was like, man, that's a setup, man, because that's usually when I go to away games, that's where I'm trolling like the fans.
You're by the Lions bench, right?
I'm by the Lions bench, yeah.
Not yet. It was a big Red Sea, dude. I mean, that last drive, even when we were trying to tie the game up, their defense chants were getting pretty loud. Like, it felt like almost like a Niners home game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I give credit to the Niners fans. They showed up. Credit to our guys, and congratulations from Striking Gold, the guys that did a pregame podcast with us. Congratulations to those guys of getting a win week one versus our Lions. So, hey, we covered the spread, though, so... And we got Malcolm 17 points.
Yeah, exactly. I told you, at least give us 17, man. Now you want to give us 17. We put up 33. Let's go.
We got 17. I'm like, hey. I was telling Pierre, I'm like, hey, we got 17 at least.
We got 17. For real, man.
So, that was a positive, I guess, for Malcolm because he wanted the 17 piece.
At least, man. Come on, man.
All right, guys. It's always much appreciated if you could leave a 5-star review on Apple or wherever the hell you guys are listening. It's always much appreciated. It helps us out and helps more people, you know, find us and they can listen to us. And I'm out, guys. Peace. We'll see you week two.
All right, y'all. It's your boy Malcolm, and I am out. Peace.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.